Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tanamane Namaste Sarasati Deve Gauravani Prachadine Nirvisesha Sunyavadi Paschachade Satarine. Can everybody hear well with the outside ambience? I turn it up slightly. Is it okay? Yeah. Okay. Their excitement. Om agana tiramandasa gana gana salakaya chaksura milatam yena tasme sri gurave namaha. This is the third session discussing about the... Okay. This is the third session of speaking about the very fortunate opportunity I had of associating with Srila Prabhupada. And in the first two sessions, I've mentioned a number of things, one of which I will bring up again, that if it were left up to me, although I desired to serve my spiritual master as a menial servant, I never felt myself, even after many years of being with Srila Prabhupada, fit to be in the same room with him. And this will come out in each of the days that we talk about him. But still, it's my fortune and his arrangement, virtually entirely, that on his order, request from him, can't say instruction because it's so gentle, instruction may not give the tone of his request to me, that whenever I had a free moment, I should come and sit and listen. And he selected me to be the temple president and started to giving me various duties. Sometimes one gets that fortune by just having to be around. So, of course, that's also fortunate. How is one be around when A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada is in need? And even if I was the last common denominator of a competent person, I was around, so... I get that. We left off yesterday with my about to be leaving for Delhi. Srila Prabhupada had appointed me as temple president, and I had discussed with him in the interim of travels that there was going to be an international book fair held in New Delhi. And he had kept books in Delhi, and I had purchased a booth, rented a booth there. And I was about to leave the first international Hare Krishna festival taking place in Mayapur, all 25 or 30 devotees of us. Now there's how many? 10,000 accumulate, plus the outsiders. Hardly anybody was coming to Mayapur at that time from the public as well. So Srila Prabhupada revived understanding and remembrance of Krishna in so many ways. He called us the dancing white elephants. Indians were reluctant to take up their own culture. They were reluctant to follow Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Only a few were doing. And Srila Prabhupada used this as his technique, that if Westerners do it, then we want to do it. The same thing's going on perversely now in India. They've gotten Krishna consciousness and now they want to follow the rest of the Western ways and outdo America materially. I just wanted to mention a couple of things that happened in Calcutta before we went to Mayapur. We are running out of time on Thursday. Srila Prabhupada would sit on the porch in the Calcutta temple. And it's quite a beautiful arrangement. There's a wide veranda, some 4.5 meters wide, and it's with marble like this, but black and white marble. And it's very long, maybe 20 meters, not quite 20 meters, 18 meters long. And there are rooms next to that, including one big hall, which was serving as the temple room. And Srila Prabhupada used to like to sit there. He was sitting and he was closing his eyes. He says, ah, just like Vaikuntha, the breezes are Vaikuntha breezes. And he was watching one day Saraswati, the same Saraswati we talked about in Madras, where Srila Prabhupada hid the Krishna deity. And she was doing a little arti. I don't know if it was that deity or another deity. And she was doing an arti. She was very absorbed in doing the arti. And Srila Prabhupada just stood behind her for 15 minutes. We're all watching. We were watching Srila Prabhupada watching Saraswati doing arti. And she was so absorbed, she didn't even know Srila Prabhupada came up behind her and was very, very quiet, just watching the arti. He just enjoyed seeing this young devotee. He used to love being with the children most of all. And then all of a sudden she was done with the arti and she turned around to offer the arti and she saw Srila Prabhupada. She was so surprised. Then I had been known to know something about the Vedic scriptures by the devotees. I used to give 6 classes a day in the Buffalo Temple. But you know, I knew my limitations, and when there was a question asked of me, I would think whether or not we should answer that question, or if I couldn't get the answer as Srila Prabhupada had instructed me in the letter of initiation, that I should ask some the superior Vaishnavas around me. But one question the devotees asked me a number of times was, how do the demigods manage the material affairs? In other words, we didn't have the, we only had the first canto of Bhagavatam at this point. You know, how do you open and close your eyes? The demigods control this. So we had heard this. And devotees asked me. Myself, I didn't think it was a very important question. I didn't see that Srila Prabhupada put emphasis on these minute details. Srila Prabhupada comments about these things in the 34th verse of the 4th chapter, which is the verse Tadvidhi Paripratana. In the purport, he says, these are absurd questions. He uses a beautiful word there, because actually some of them are stupid questions, like one question devotee asked of Srila Prabhupada, why do we have 6 threads on our Brahman thread? Prabhupada said, I never thought to ask my spiritual master that question. He gently replied. So I had mixed feelings. I had already asked Srila Prabhupada some questions, and I had mixed feelings, but because I felt I was disappointing my godbrothers and not being able to give them the answer, and I had a little more opportunity of associating with Prabhupada than some of them, I thought, well, here's an opportunity, tadvidhi, paripratyana, pariprasana, sevaya, upadakshanti. So I've been doing some seva. I've asked him some questions. I should put him this question. But I didn't feel good about it, and I was always shy coming to Prabhupada, so I thought about it. Every day I'd think about it. And finally, the third day, I went to him, and I asked Srila Prabhupada if I could pose a question. He said, yes. I said, sure. And I gave that question. And just as there's sunlight behind me, and there's a lot of light, and so if you look a little direction, it's hard to look. There was no light behind Srila Prabhupada, but there certainly was light then. And his eyes, which are naturally brownish, became gray. And it was as if the Brahma Jyoti was coming from him. He did not like this question. So he gave me a very nice, important instruction, which I should every morning recite to myself. He said, with your puny brain, you cannot understand the workings of the demigods. So that's enough purport on that. So I went to Delhi. The early days of ISKCON posed interesting challenges. Oftentimes we had to go alone, we had to go with no money, we had to go with underclothed. It was March, which meant in the night times in Delhi it would get to 2 or 3 degrees. The daytime could be a little bit warmer. So I went with no bedding. Is an understandable word, bedding? It's too British. No sleeping gear. No sleeping gear. I didn't even have a sweater. And I had one thin cotton chadar. That was all I had. I had a pair of flip-flops and no money. And I arrived there. Somehow I had a ticket and I walked. And I thought, where can I stay? This is a challenge. You have to stay someplace. It wouldn't look good for Hare Krishna to be sleeping in the park. So I went to one man, and his name was Bhimsena. And he had a sweet shop in Bengali Market. Somehow I was always attracted to Bengali Market. We had three centers in Bengali Market. And this was our first center in Bengali Market. So he agreed to give me a room. And in it was in the back of his garage. There was a tiny room. It was really a small room. Just enough for a bed and like 3 feet more. And already in the room, there was another person. So, and he was a Gandhian, really old man. And he had a chakra, you know, the spinning chakra. And he didn't sleep. He didn't sleep at night. He slept in the day. And so this is my first night in the garage. And he would spin all night, you know. So that's how I passed my first night. It was interesting. At least I had a place, and it was relatively warm. And in the morning, the Mataji, Indian Matajis, they're usually very charming and very convivial. They want to give you something to eat, and so she made me something to eat, and then off I went to get the books. And our book storage depot was in another interesting place. It was in a shoe shop. There was a nice gentleman, B.D. Alawalia, B23, Connaught Place, Kelson Shoes. And he was very, very nice, beautiful looking Kshatriya gentleman. And whatever I would ask him, he would accommodate. So he had agreed to store the Srimad Bhagavatams along with the shoes. So we have to do many things. Our first temple had been a brewery, and then my first place is a garage. And then I'm off to the book fair to see what to be done. So I came back in the evening, and the Mataji was crying. She said, I have to talk to you quickly. She spoke to me in Hindi, that you have to leave. I'm so sorry. You have to leave. I don't know where you'll go, but you'll have to leave. Because my husband got so upset I gave you prasadam that he started to beat me. And so there I was, my first day in Delhi, already homeless. So I went back to one of my few friends, B.D. Alawali, and I said, Mr. Alawali, I need some place to stay. I am homeless again. He says, well, you know, my house is full of guests. We don't have any place. He says, but I do have one place that I can offer you. But, you know, look at your life. You're a sadhu. I don't think you'll accept our place, the place I have. And I said, look, when you have no place to stay, any place is heaven. So he says, I have a barber shop. So my next night was in the barber shop, and I stayed there for about 10 days. I had a guest once who stayed with me in that tiny barbershop. It was quite actually nice because there was a massage bench, and after the people work, I cleaned the whole barbershop, and it was actually warm water, and I hang my single dhoti on the rack that divided the massage table from the rest. And it was actually a really good arrangement for me. A lot of conveniences I found. But one morning, 3-4 days into staying in the barbershop, there's this huge pounding on the door. And I think, who's here? You know, who would be coming? And I open it up, and there was Ramananda Swami. He says, Tejas, where can I stay? I said, how did you find me? So he stayed a couple of days. Ramananda was always very gentle, you know. He was a big man with a gentle mentality. So that was my first days. And it was difficult. I was wearing out my stay in the barbershop. I shouldn't take advantage of staying in the place. And so I went from place to place, and every 2-3 days. So I'm setting the scene, and Srila Prabhupada had not told me anything. I was there, and Brahmananda had told me that Srila Prabhupada had gone to Vrindavan and had left. Brahmananda was there so that he could meet up with Srila Prabhupada. And then about a week later, when I went to Kelson Shoes, that was my mailing address, B23, Kelson Shoes, Connaught Place, New Delhi, 10001. Because, you know, your first home you always remember, right? And that's where Prabhupada wrote me a letter. And I'm surrounding this so you can see the amazement that I had when I got this letter. Srila Prabhupada said, now that you are in Delhi, I want you to help build the Krishna Balaram temple in Vrindavan. So this was a great perplexity. I couldn't even arrange a room. I actually hadn't eaten most every other day. I was eating something because I was very strict about collecting money from the sales of books, that it had to be deposited first. And I had mentioned this before. So I thought, how will I do this? I have no idea how to build a temple in India. I have an idea of carpentry. I said, but you can't build a temple in India out of wood. So I wrote a letter to Gunagrahi, who was not a Maharaja at that time. He never came, but I thought, how do you fulfill the order of the spiritual master? What do you do when you get an order from the spiritual master that is way above the circumstance that you're in? Well, the only thing you can do is take it as into your heart, deep into your heart, and say, Krishna, I have no idea how to fulfill this order, but this is what I have to do. Srila Prabhupada has asked me to do this, so I must do this. And this was in addition to trying to build the temple in Delhi, but which I didn't know much what to do with that, because Prabhupada had not said much after we went on our tour. So this was the state of affairs. I was collecting. Srila Prabhupada sent message to me through Gurudas Prabhu that I should help to collect money for the Vrindavan project. So the picture started to come together, what Srila Prabhupada was going to do. Sarabhi Swami became the architect and started visiting Delhi. Although he was not an architect by training, he was a designer, and he worked with the local engineers. And then Srila Prabhupada put me in charge. No one else was there, but he put me in charge as the controller of the accounts of Vrindavan, which was an interesting task. That when they needed money, there was money in the accounts. This gradually evolved, that I had to go through the accounts, and then I would send a letter to Srila Prabhupada, who carried the checkbook. He'd carry the checkbooks for Bombay, Vrindavan, and Mayapur. And Prabhupada kept the set of accounts, and we kept a duplicate set of accounts, and when the devotees in charge of the construction needed money, they would come to the person who Prabhupada had appointed. In Mayapur, it was Gargamuni, and it was me in Delhi, and Giriraj in Bombay. And then they'd sign off, and then Prabhupada would send a check, and we countersigned it. It wasn't the most popular job to have. Controlling money, right? Everybody wants it, and you have to deny some people. Then I was staying in one place after the other, and the whole day I was collecting money. I mentioned I had made three vows in my life. The first was that I would never go to Delhi. The second was that I would never deal with businessmen and do mercantile work. So I was selling books, and the people I was collecting from were businessmen. Then I was going, some days I'd stay in a temple for 2-3 days, somebody's house, somebody's living room. And my wife, she was not coming to join me. I was wondering why. After all, we had a place every day. I tried to convince her to come, and then I don't know what impelled her, but finally she came from Mayapur to join me in Delhi. And I panicked because I didn't have a place to stay, even for that day. So there's a place called Old Rajendra Nagar. And I knew a man, his name was K.L. Bhargava. And I had run out of places. You know, you don't want to overstay your stay. And I went to this man, and what he did is he agreed to give me his porch. It was enclosed by screens, which was nice, no mosquitoes. And I thought, well, I'll figure something out. So I went to the railway station and brought my wife. It was just a wooden platform with a rug on top, which wasn't too bad. But there's one problem with that arrangement was there was this shaggy German Shepherd dog who slept underneath the bed and all night made sounds and made smells. And the next morning, to my amazement, my faithful wife left for Vrindavan. There I was in Delhi alone. Different devotees would show up. Gurdas actually had received a letter about that time from Srila Prabhupada. And a new phase of my relationship developed. Srila Prabhupada wrote to him, "Yes, Tejas is a very good worker, and I very much appreciate. You may ask him to write to me his report, and I shall be very glad to hear from him." So this was the beginning of my correspondences with Srila Prabhupada. And there was another letter. I wrote to Srila Prabhupada about our preaching, and I made a comment that it appears that our books really, especially, are appreciated by intelligent persons. And Srila Prabhupada's dealing in preaching, dealing with people, is very beautiful to study. He never, ever, in even the smallest fraction, took a person as an object. The purity of a pure heart is that the person who has such a pure heart only sees himself as servant. And the impure heart, proportionately, only sees himself as an exploiter, as an enjoyer. So I'll just read you something from a letter that I got after writing to Srila Prabhupada. And it's something that we can benefit from in our preaching work, the attitude that a devotee has in preaching. And we see this sometimes, people making members or collecting money, and some have a tendency to possibly get lost. Actually, this making life members is a certain sign that our preaching work is successful. If somebody pays us, that is almost the same as converting him. So the more life members that you make in Delhi, the more I can understand that your preaching work is very pleasing to Krishna. Krishna is most pleased by his servant who preaches by convincing others on his behalf. And he continues on giving me instructions about BBT. I didn't know it, but I had been assigned to be a BBT trustee. Prabhupada started writing me letters about printing books and various things, but I had no idea why. But interesting things happen in ISKCON, especially in the early days. And Prabhupada was encouraging. He kept on saying about cooperative work, "I very much appreciate your courageous preaching, and I can understand that Krishna is giving you all facilities for making your spiritual advancement." I would read these letters, and I never wondered about, the beauty of the letters, but I would wonder about, making advancement in spiritual life. I couldn't even get a room to rent. I could hardly have the funds. So I didn't consider it very successful. Then about that time, I was staying in a dharmshala. I don't know if any of you have been to Delhi. There's a place called Kashmiri Gate. And there I found a dharmshala. I had mentioned in the first talk about staying in a dharmshala. But this was the dirtiest dharmshala. I've traveled all over India. I traveled 8 years extensively, going to hundreds of places. I took a 1,000 train rides. I've been in the dirtiest possible situations. But this was the dirtiest place I've ever been in India. It was really, really dirty. It stank, and there was not much I can do about it. And it was the summertime, and another problem was that the floors were stone. So the floors were all heated. There were no fans, and I would go out preaching, and I was alone. Dinanath Prabhu, the one I mentioned in the talk yesterday, the day before, who had led that beautiful kirtan, he came. And unfortunately, he stayed for 2 days because the lady who was running the dharmashala was ghostly haunted, because there were a lot of ghosts in that dharmashala because it was so dirty. And the ghosts, they attacked the lady, and then the lady chased Dinanath Prabhu around the dharmashala. And he came to me and says, Prabhu, I have to go. Sorry, I have to go to Vrindavan. I can't stay here. So there I was alone again. And then a couple days after that, one sannyasi by the name of Subal Swami showed up with his assistant, Brahmachari. And I had to devise a program for preaching. Srila Prabhupada wanted me to send money to Vrindavan for construction. We were just beginning. There was no one else at that time collecting. And Prabhupada would send messages to me, and they would come from Vrindavan and say, where's the money? And then he had asked me to get maintenance, which meant I couldn't take any money from the books. I'd have to sell from the life membership. 50% went to construction and 50% went to BBT, leaving zero. So I'd have to sell books also. So I was really struggling. And every time someone would come, they'd find it austere and leave. And I say, well, if you don't stay, I can't get a better facility. So, and then Vrindavan, the devotees would come, and the devotees would come from Vrindavan, and then they would leave but ask the maintenance money, but they wouldn't stay and help me. And Prabhupada would write them, help him, but they'd go away. So when this sannyasi showed up, and he said, you know, where's my prasadam? He sent his brahmachari assistant. But I didn't have any money left from sending all the money to Vrindavan for maintenance. And I was eating a banana every other day. Every other day I'd eat some dates, and that was my meal except for a glass of milk that someone would give me. And every day I'd go out. And he called me into the room. Mininiketan, that was the brahmachari assistant. Mininiketan Das. So Balaswami called me into the room, and he says, What's going on? You're the temple president, and I'm a sannyasi, and you're not providing me any facility, and you're not giving prasadam. I said, Maharaj, you know, I don't have prasadam for myself. So I went into the kitchen, and I had just gotten an arrangement of some steamer. So I took some wheat flour and some jaggery, brown sugar, mixed it with water. I didn't have any baking powder, and I steamed it, and there was this lump. And that's what I ate, and I first brought it to Maharaj. I said, this is the prasadam for tonight. I'm sorry, you know, this is what Krishna has given me. Then he went on a whole tirade. You're totally in Maya. This program is Maya. And I actually did not have any doubt. I know that I'm in Maya. Prabhupada said, Maya is all around. I know I'm in Maya, but I didn't feel that my program was Maya. Because he was attacking my program. He says, what do you do? So then I told him, and then just to pacify myself, I wrote to Srila Prabhupada this whole event, and I gave Srila Prabhupada my program that I would come back from preaching at 8 o'clock, and then I'd have kirtan and read Bhagavad Gita and go to sleep. I'd wash my one and only dhoti and one and only kurta and hang it out at night, and then I'd wake up in the morning and wash the one of the two gamshas and wear the second gamsha wet, and then I'd chant my 16 rounds, I'd recite Srimad Bhagavatam, I'd have Mangalarti after chanting my rounds, and then there was nothing to do. There was no way to clean. There was nothing to cook. So I would go out at 6 o'clock. I'd take a bus and go. The first place I'd see that I'd feel there'd be some possibility someone would buy some books or become a member, I'd get down and go door to door till 9:30. Then I'd go to where businesses are and I'd go all day, and then sometimes hitch rides. And I wrote this to Srila Prabhupada to clarify whether or not somehow or other, by mistake, because the sannyasi criticized me, And even though I didn't appreciate it, that you know, that the way he criticized me, I wanted to clarify this, make sure that, you know, when we're in doubt, we should go to our spiritual master or those he's appointed to look after us. So I got this response from Srila Prabhupada. I have noted the contents with great pleasure. There were some other programs that were going on. And it says, your program for preaching in Delhi is very much approved by me. Preaching Krishna is the same as remembering Krishna. I can understand if one of my students is making spiritual advancement if he is also making many members and devotees. So you have not to minimize the preaching program in order to study independently. No, continuing as you are doing, preach as much as possible, collect, make life members, and whenever you have time, read and study. And never neglect to chant your 16 rounds daily, and this will be the perfect program. So there you have the perfect program, if you ever want to know. So Srila Prabhupada, it's not that he was against us studying, actually he brought this up many times. But overall he really emphasized the practical application of the studying. So that was the answer to my doubt. In October of 1972, Srila Prabhupada came to Delhi from a tour of San Francisco, Honolulu, and Philippines and Hong Kong. And he arrived late at night, and the mayor of Delhi, his name was Hansraj Gupta, went with us to greet Srila Prabhupada at the airport. By that time, I had gotten a small place in West Patel Nagar. And we went to pick up Srila Prabhupada, and it was a very, very small place. The rooms were very tiny, maybe 3 meters by 3 meters, and one shared bathroom. But that's what we had to offer, and Srila Prabhupada came back, and it was 11 o'clock at night. And I watched Srila Prabhupada had just come from quite a bit of journeying, but he still took the time to not only to talk to Hansraj Guptaji and the other guests, but to preach to them. He started talking about a recent airline hijacking. I don't know what it would have been in October 1972. Do you remember? We can look it up on Google. Anybody got Google on your cell phones? So there had been a recent hijacking of an airplane. And Srila Prabhupada took that. He says, at any moment, padam padam yatvidam natesham. He says, at any moment, something can happen that we can face death. So then, even though it was now 12:30 at night, and Hansraj Ji left and I was waiting, and Srila Prabhupada said, so now we will discuss accounts. What do you do when you get money? And I said, Srila Prabhupada, I deposited it in the bank, because finally I had my own bank account. They used to take the money to Vrindavan and leave me totally penniless, and then ask me to maintain them. That's quite interesting management. Huh? You say, I give you zero money to take care of yourself, but you give me all of your collection and maintain me. So that wasn't working so well. And then I told him, and he said, and then? I said, 50% goes to the book fund. Prabhupada said, very good. And he took rest, but he got up early in the morning, and we had arranged a gentleman to give a car to go to Vrindavan. Prabhupada was headed to Vrindavan to have the Nectar of Devotion classes. We were waiting, and the car was coming, didn't come. It was late, so we called the gentleman. He says, no, the car is going to come. So it was getting really late. We hired two taxis. We had a system that when Srila Prabhupada would go, we would have two cars. In India, in those days, there were two cars that were made. One is the ambassador, and the other was Fiat. Even Mahindra wasn't making cars. And the probability was if you went 50 kilometers, the car could break down. I would take taxis in Delhi, and there was one Sadaji. He used to take a taxi, and almost, even though his car was well-maintained every day on the road, someplace it broke down, and he'd have to get out and fix it with some wires. And so we would arrange two cars, just for safety's sake. You don't want to be stranded on the Mathura highway with Srila Prabhupada. So we rented two taxis, and while we were waiting for the taxis to come, Srila Prabhupada was talking to us, preaching. He'd take every moment to preach. And he brought up the subject, Dehinasmin yata dehe, komaram javanam jara. He says, we're always changing the bodies. He says that when the body becomes broken, we get out of the body, and we are put in a new body. So this was the morning Srimad Bhagavatam class by Srila Prabhupada. And so the cars showed up, and Srila Prabhupada got in the first car, and we were about to go when the gentleman who had agreed to give us a car, he showed up with the car. And he says, here's the car for Swamiji. But we had already agreed with the taxi drivers, and if you send them away, you have to pay the money. Prabhupada said, it's okay, have him follow along. So it was very awkward for me, embarrassing, but Srila Prabhupada had me sit next to him, and there were other devotees in the car, and as we were driving, Srila Prabhupada started to ask, he says, what's the most beautiful city in the world? So I had a feeling there was a purpose of this conversation. But I had to give my honest opinion. But so I waited for everybody to say. And one said, Paris is the most beautiful city in the world. Where's our Parisians? Our Frenchmen. Paris is the most beautiful city in the world. It's so well developed. And then someone said, Washington, D.C. is the most beautiful city in the world. And someone said, London is the most beautiful city in the world. And everybody gave their opinion, and Srila Prabhupada says, and what is your opinion? I said, Delhi is the most beautiful city in the world. Even though I hated to be in Delhi, because I was always sick, but it really is well laid out. It's an amazing city. If you see, I was just looking this morning at the maps of Delhi, and it's very, very well laid out, and the Ford Foundation had been contracted to develop the plan for New Delhi. It's a very well-planned city. And it's fabulous, with the parliament and the Raja's house, the president of India's house, and long mall and big buildings. It's a very, very impressive city. Despite I was there only on some special person's request. So as we were driving, all of a sudden a taxi cab, which was supposed to be in, we were the number one taxi cab, and taking the lead, a number two taxi cab, Indian drivers sometimes, it's an understatement, get a little wild. And even though he had been requested and ordered to stay as number two in case this car broke down, and there were devotees in that car, despite the devotees shouting at him, we could see that the devotees were shouting at him and hitting the driver to stop, he passed Srila Prabhupada. And there he was, zooming away, and the devotees were hitting him, and he just wouldn't stop the car, So just 1 minute after that happened, boom, 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 our ambassador car, it conked out. But by Krishna's arrangement, because that other man had come late, there was a third car. And the third car came, and we got out. And then we all looked at each other. We remembered, Dehinasmin yata dehe. Just as you change bodies, Prabhupada just says, now it's broken. We'll get in the next one. A lot of subtle preaching that Prabhupada did, we can't exactly say that he could know the future, but there was just too many times it happened, that he would use the circumstance and something interesting would go on. So we were in Vrindavan, and Srila Prabhupada was giving daily classes on nectar devotion. We were sitting at the samadhi of Srila Rupa Goswami. And Prabhupada was staying upstairs in the Radha Damodar temple. A small room that had been renovated by Buddhadas and Jamuna. They oversaw the renovation with some small amount of funds. And there was no Krishna Balaram temple yet. We were just beginning the foundation and just beginning Prabhupada's rooms. So we accommodated him in the room upstairs that had been newly built. And sometimes in the morning we'd go for walks, different places with him. One morning we're walking and Srila Prabhupada looked up, there was a light on. So he said, we're not going. And then he sent the devotees back to turn out the light. Wherever Prabhupada walked, even one time in London, we were walking in the park. What is that park? Regent's Park. And there was a tap that someone had left open. So Srila Prabhupada went, we all went with him, and Prabhupada turned off the water tap. Even though it was in the public, he didn't think, oh, it's just not our water. He would think it's Krishna's water. And he would turn off the lights, and if you left the light on, he wouldn't yell at you, really, but you know, you'd feel like that. Prabhupada rarely raised his voice. I was reading something that Dhananjaya wrote about Delhi. It's something that happened in our discussions the next day. But there was a problem in one of our centers where there was no water. And Dhananjaya's description of it is that Prabhupada blasted Tejas. You know, he didn't really blast us. He would make his point and then leave it. And sometimes, if it was really careless, then Prabhupada would bring it up. And on that point, there was something that one of our sannyasis did. His name was Achyutananda. This is something that really Prabhupada mentioned to Achyutananda for several years after this. It's rare that Prabhupada would bring things up. He would let it go. He would be slightly irritated. He wouldn't raise his voice. He would usually ask you to close the door, and he would lower his voice when something was very serious. And he'd close the door, make sure you're alone. He didn't humiliate people in public, except if you did something that he really wanted everybody to know, or if you were tolerant enough that he could use you as the scapegoat, you know, where he would chastise you so everyone else could hear and know that you would tolerate. When Maharaja Bharatpur had sent a huge, huge silver swing for Radha and Krishna deities, which we didn't have, but he sent this swing. And the only person there at the time was Achyutananda Swami. And Achyutananda didn't ever want to take responsibility, and he thought if he signed for it and something happened, so he sent the swing away. And when Prabhupada heard about this, he talked about this every hour of the day for days. And Prabhupada, I can't do it the way I'm sitting, but I was amazed how dexterous Prabhupada was. He held out his hand, he says, Lakshmi comes, and then Prabhupada raised his left leg and kicked his foot over his right hand. He says, kick it away. He says, Lakshmi comes, and we kick it away. This is Mayavadi. You know, Mayavadi. We don't want for Krishna. No, we're here, just like Ravan stole Sita. And Ram and Hanuman rescued Sita. He says, so when someone gives, you kicked it away. And Prabhupada said it again and again. And ultimately, Achyutananda went to Madras. And Prabhupada appreciated it. He says, this is nice, preaching in separation. So rarely did Prabhupada continue to say something again and again. About this time, during this period, several of our god brothers were taking sannyas. Parabhajakacharya, Paramhansa, Panchadravida, they took sannyas during this period of time. And during this time period, my wife was always running away from the beautiful arrangements I made in Delhi. And the sannyasis were amazed, and they kept on saying, you know, Tejas, you're very detached. Look at you. You stay in conditions. No sannyasi can stay. And, you know, your wife is always arguing with you, and you don't have a very nice marital life. And you're always preaching. Srila Prabhupada appreciates your preaching. You should become a sannyasi. So I said, you know, I actually, to be honest, you know, I'm not over my material attachments. And, you know, Srila Prabhupada waited to take sannyas, and I'm still attached. And what a little good... He says, no, if you take sannyas, it will help you with your material attachments. I said, well, it doesn't make sense to me. And they kept on cornering me. Tamal Krishna was there. He had already taken sannyas. And Yasodhananda Swami. And they kept on cornering me. So every day in the afternoon they do that. And I say, they didn't yell at me, but they kept on cornering me. I said, look, I said, all right. You keep on saying, and I keep on denying, I know that I'm not ready for sannyas. So I'll present it to Srila Prabhupada. And then we'll leave it to him. I really didn't want to do this, but just to get them off my back, I did that. So then I went to Radha Dhanavar temple, and I stood outside Srila Prabhupada's room, and I thought, this is not right, I shouldn't ask him. And I went away. Then the next day I came back, and I didn't go in his room, even though I know I should go in the room, but if I went in the room, I had to ask him this question, and I went back. And the third day I went in, and I just had to do it. Otherwise, the sannyasi say, why didn't you ask him? And then so I went in. And just as I need a volunteer just to demonstrate this. Will you be the volunteer? Okay. How are your knees? Are they okay? All right. I don't have good knees. And normally when I would come into the room, I would sit properly after doing obeisances. But on this particular day, Srila Prabhupada started to talk to me very quickly, and I was stuck sitting on my knees. So you can sit on your knees. Come this... sit a little bit back so the Matajis can also see. And I'll just tell you what to do. So as I came in, just at that time, Srila Prabhupada's afternoon plate of fruits had been brought. It was quite a big plate, about 12 inches or some 25 centimeters wide, and it was full of fruits. And Srila Prabhupada asked me, what do I want? And I braved myself. It was so difficult to ask Srila Prabhupada any question, although he was so gentle. But this question I didn't want to. I said, Srila Prabhupada, I want to take sannyas. I said it. And I thought, wow, how did I say that? And just then, Srila Prabhupada gave me a piece of fruit. So he put out a hand, and he put a piece of fruit in my hand. And he looked at me, he says, and so, why do you want, Prabhupada used this word, so. And many devotees who write, it confounds editors that we use the word so. So, but it's beautiful because we become inducted and addicted to Prabhupada-ish. And he said, so, why do you want to take sannyas? And I really know, this is going to be very difficult. I said, Srila Prabhupada, and then he put, as we're just talking, Srila Prabhupada is every few seconds taking one piece of fruit off of the plate, keep your hand up, and putting it in my hand. And he says, and then I said, I thought, Srila Prabhupada, I want to take sannyas so that I can preach. And Prabhupada looked at me, and I knew what his answer was going to be. He says, but you're already preaching. Keep your hand up. So my hand by that time is getting pretty full, and I'm spreading my fingers, and it's getting like a lot of fruit, like 10, 12 pieces. Then I thought, well, Srila Prabhupada, my wife, she's not happy in the relationship, and she's always quarreling. He says, no. And then I had to put out my second hand. There were so many fruits. He says, I know your wife, Madhira. She's a very nice devotee. And Prabhupada had her give a class, much to her total embarrassment. He says, she plays harmonium very nicely. She assists you in preaching. And it went on like this. And Srila Prabhupada had literally taken every piece of fruit off of his plate. I felt horrible. But what are you going to do, I'm not going to give it back to him, even like Mukunda Maharaj, I knew a little bit better, even if I hadn't touched it. And so it went on, because we don't have enough time, but it went on some time, and I was just thinking, when will this end, So I said, so, any other question? No, Srila Prabhupada, and somehow with that fruit, I managed to go out. So that was what I call my sannyas fiasco. Let me read you one more letter, and I'll tell you two more stories. There were so many troubles. Prabhupada kept on saying that devotees should come and help me, and I was still struggling, and they were wanting more money, and I was always getting sick. And I was always thinking that I'm really a miserable servant of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada wants to build this temple. At that time, we weren't getting funds from any other sources, and temple construction was going slowly. I tried to put on a festival in Delhi, and because of a lack of manpower, I couldn't put on the festival. And I felt that Srila Prabhupada was disappointed. So I wrote him a letter explaining my anxieties and my feelings of inner disturbance as not being a good disciple, and confessed to him my feelings. This is what he wrote back. I'll just read part of it. It's a really long letter, and I suggest anybody who faces disturbances to read the letters to me, and it's always a beautiful source of consolation. Prabhupada says, "Do not be disturbed. There is no cause for anxiety. You are doing your best to serve Krishna. That is very much appreciated. So do not lose enthusiasm out of frustration. That will spoil everything. Krishna consciousness means we should always be satisfied and happy, not that we work something impossible, becoming overburdened, and then, because we are unhappy by so much trouble, we lose enthusiasm altogether and give up all hope. No, if too much endeavor is there, that is to be avoided. By all means, we must persevere our spiritual status." That is the point. And this is very important to understand. Not that we are mad after big buildings, many devotees, life members, this, that. No. These are only ways to engage the devotees so that they may apply the principles of devotional living to some kind of work for practical realization of these principles. It is not the result of the work we want. And this is a really good point, that when you're down and out, don't know what to do. If only one person daily, if we sincerely preach to such one person in a day, that is sufficient. Never mind big, big programs. And then Prabhupada said that Tamal and others, Shamasundar, will send me men. And he says, Krishna does not like to see his sincere devotees suffer or become frustrated or depressed. He will not stand idly by in any such case. So do not fear on that account. Krishna has got some plan for you. Always think in that way, and very soon he will provide everything to your heart's desire. So even today I read this letter, and you know, Krishna is very soon, might take a little while. I have so many desires. And at the same time, one of the reasons I had written to him, there was a devotee by the name of Dwija Hari, and he had been an underwater demolition expert in Korean War. And he had just come, he was the first, well, Vaikunthanath had come and left, his wife, Saradia, who was 17 years old in my charge. So therefore I was taking care of this young girl who was like really very fragile, you know, Saradia. And my wife, who was like also just like 18 or something like that. And I had these two young ladies who I had to be taking care of. The husband had left the lady in my charge, which was really strange, just run off to be with Prabhupada. And then they finally sent me a devotee after Prabhupada said, they'll send you devotees. He kept on asking him, send Tejas some men. He really has this to do this. It's my karma like this. Men don't come, they leave. And then this Dwija Hari came because he had been in a knife fight with Chaitanya Simha in Bombay. No, actually with Naranarayan. He had been in a knife fight with Naranarayan. He had a knife and Naranarayan had a hatchet, and they were running around the middle. You know what it was. There used to be an apartment complex with a circle of park. They were chasing each other around the park, and so they had to get rid of one of them. So Naranarayan is really hard to get rid of, so they sent Dwija Hari. He says, go to Delhi, help Tejas. So this is who they sent me. And then he wouldn't go out and preach. He would sometimes, and so he was there. And one day I came back, and both of the Matajis, they were crying. I mean, they were, you know, this guy was frightening looking. He had a scar on his face. And when he talked like this,
He had jagged teeth and broken, you know, and he talked like this. And so one of the ladies didn't cook him prasadam. He said, I'm going to kill you, you know. Narayana had done that to me too, you know. So many interesting persons in our movement. Sometimes we have to face such situations. So I wrote to Srila Prabhupada and, you know, told him, he says, but so if Dvijahari is concerned, if he's acting in that way, that is abominable. He has collected some money. My direct order for him is he should immediately leave Delhi. If he tries to commit further harm to you or attack you physically, inform the police and have him arrested. Now, there's a double-edged sword about the Veda base. And I wrote to Srila Prabhupada because I spoke to Dvijahari and I tried to pacify him. I'm not really good at dealing with difficult people. I have some things that Krishna has given me a special ability in, like really special. And I know that I'm not using it like 1%. But one ability he hasn't given me is to deal with people when they're being difficult. I just say, so what? You know, you be difficult. I can't deal with you. And that doesn't help people when they're difficult. They feel that I said, you want to be difficult? That's fine. I'm not going to deal with your difficulty. So then Prabhupada wrote him a letter, and you know, in the meantime, it was pacified. But unfortunately, and we have to be careful about using the Vedabase, this devotee later on, he had an anger management problem in every center he went to. And when there was a small thing, difficulty, he would explode. And then later on, they pulled out the Vedabase and then said, see, it's not just here. You had this problem, and Prabhupada knew that you had this problem. And he says, when I ever meet that Tejas Das, I'm going to kill him. And they said, you don't have an anger management problem, do you? And he says, no, I have no trouble controlling my anger. Anyway, we actually met each other, and fortunately for me, not that he was not angry, we were able to reconcile our differences many years later. On a visit to New Talavan, where he's residing, the temple president says, you know, Dvijahari is here, and he hasn't forgotten about your letter. And I hadn't known that devotees had misused this letter from Srila Prabhupada. So, two more stories, because we don't want to go over the 9 o'clock time. I had visited Prabhupada in Vrindavan, and he gave me a suggestion, because, you know, no manpower was there, and this is before Dvijahari showed up. He says, you're having a manpower problem. He said, just as in America, and he actually wrote me a letter about this, saying the same thing. I'll just read the letter. And Prabhupada had discussed this with me in person. Many interesting things. I was sending money to BBT. They weren't sending me books. No one else paid, and they gave them books. And I was a BBT trustee, and I paid, and they wouldn't give me books. So anyway, I am informed that there are many so-called hippies staying in Delhi. So you try to recruit some of these men or other local men to assist you. Your description of struggling is to be understood as the mercy of Krishna. I wrote again how I was struggling. When he is satisfied by your giving your energy in this way, just to please him, despite all conditions of difficulty, then you need not worry for money. There will be sufficient and more. So the interesting thing is that next time I met Srila Prabhupada, he said, so what's the report? And I reported him that I had gone to Mohan Singh Market in Connaught Place behind Regal Cinema. There was a place where they served Jews and they did illegal money exchanges and you could get clothing made. And the hippies used to go there who were visiting India, and they would, you know, do their thing, get some ganja. And so I reported it to Srila Prabhupada that I had, you know, he had written me a letter and he had asked me in person. And he said, why are you preaching to the hippies? If you want to preach the hippies, you should return to your country. So what do you do when your spiritual master, not only your spiritual master, but if you were dealing directly with Srila Prabhupada, not to minimize anybody's spiritual master or temple president, it's not my point. But imagine if you were dealing with Srila Prabhupada
And not only did he tell you something, but he wrote you an instruction. And the next time he met you, it was as if you were in some sort of hallucination. So what do you do? So the proper thing to do was what I attempted to do, was to understand, I do not understand Srila Prabhupada. I will not even ask him. All I know is that I made a mistake someplace along the line. But the one more part for this letter, if you remember the previous letter, Prabhupada said that just it's okay even if you preach to one person a day, we're not after the results of preaching. So then Prabhupada wrote me another letter here, right letter after that. Actually, you may take this opportunity of being situated at Delhi to make every parliamentary member our life member also. You can get the list of addresses and systematically approach each and every member of parliament to become our member also. So many big lawyers, doctors, government officials, professional men, I think more than other cities, they're all intelligent men and can be easily recruited for life membership. So make many, many, many members. So Prabhupada put down the heat a little and then turned it up fivefold, you know. Now, and I told you I had made three vows in my life. When my father died, I made three vows. And two vows, and then when I left Delhi. And when my father died, because I thought that by getting mixed up with people whose minds were crooked, businessmen and politicians, that one could not properly pursue the path of truth. I guess maybe from a previous life I had this idea. So I renounced my money, which was equivalent to millions of dollars, and I made a vow I would never deal with politicians or businessmen. And now Prabhupada was asking me to deal with the politicians. And I remembered back to the meeting in London, and I said, Srila Prabhupada and the Paramatma, they're still at it. You have to be careful what you don't want, because that's what Krishna is going to ask you to do, you know. So I think, no, Krishna, I think I shouldn't do this, but I don't want to ask you this because that's what you're going to have me do next. Right? So how do I get past this? It's still going on. Krishna is always there. So I'll tell you one last relate to you one last incident, and then we'll call this a day. There was another international festival in Mayapur. A lot more devotees attended. This was 1973. And we met Srila Prabhupada again in Calcutta. And I was going into his room whenever I had a free moment. That meant quite a bit of the time I was sitting there. And in the morning, I would go for walks. I always felt that if there was nobody, I would walk along with Srila Prabhupada, because that's what we should do. And if I was in the room alone, I would sit near him. But if there was anybody else, I'd stay to the back. And, you know, it was generally a thing in ISKCON that the sannyasis, they would, and then temple presidents, well, sannyasi GBC temple presidents, they'd kind of move in, and then, you know, the lesser of us, we would be towards the back. There were some devotees, like Karandar Prabhu, was really always pushed the devotees to the front selflessly. So I was perfectly happy. And actually, I thought I shouldn't go on the morning walk because there was a lot to do in the temple. There was cleaning, there was cooking, there was taking care of the deities, which I'm not so adept at, but the Matijis were there making garlands. But I knew that if I didn't go on the walk, that it would be disappointing to Prabhupada, because he would ask me why I was not there. So I was torn between doing it, staying back and doing service, which is also important, and going on the walk. So both are important, hearing Vani and doing service. So I deferred to going on the walk and around the pond that's in front of the 3 Albert Road. And on this particular walk, one sannyasi, Yasodhananda Swami, who carried a very big danda, and he had a very big voice, and he stood erect, and he was talking on the walk. Srila Prabhupada was chanting japa. Sometimes he would talk, and he you know, Yasodhananda kept on asking, Srila Prabhupada, you say that the cause of all problems in ISKCON is the men and women freely mixing. Prabhupada was really adamant about this. Even if he saw a man and woman lingering together talking, he would bring it up to the management. Why is this going on? You don't let this happen. So this is a valid point, but and then Prabhupada said yes, and then Prabhupada stopped. You know, he went back to japa, and Yasodhananda couldn't get the hint that Prabhupada wanted to just chant japa. And he went on, and he said, Maya, and the women, and the brahmacharis. And this is like 5-10 minutes, and all of us were a little tired. We wanted to just, Prabhupada wanted to chant japa. It's beautiful to just to chant japa with him. So Prabhupada wheels around. It was amazing how he could stop. He would walk really fast. All of us were young. Even though we might get sick, we were still strong, and we could walk, you know, 8 kilometers an hour at a pace, and Prabhupada would outpace us. I mean, he would just be sailing. And he would talk, and we would all be out of breath during the walks. And Prabhupada, if you listen to the talks when he's walking, he never got out of breath, even he was talking. It's really hard to do if you're walking very fast and talking successively at a nonstop. And Prabhupada wheeled around and planted his cane in the ground and put his hands, one on the other, on the canes, and looked Yasodhananda in the eye, and he says, yes, women are Maya. But the story is not over yet, Matajis. Association with women is Maya. And Sannyasi was so happy. Prabhupada said it, women are Maya, association. And Prabhupada, he was happy, you know. And then we went around for another 15 minutes. And then the staircase in 3 Albert Road is a split staircase. You're going up about 8 or 12 stairs. The ceiling is higher, the floor, first floor is higher than here, maybe some 4 meters. And it's split, and then there's a landing, and then it goes in the other direction towards the entrance of the temple. So we were walking up, and as we were walking up, and we reached the landing and changing direction to go towards the opening of the temple, there were all the Matajis who had made garlands, and they did obeisances. And 3 or 4 steps up, Prabhupada started to turn around, and he continued his step up, and the sannyasi, who always wanted to be right next to him, was 1-2 steps behind. And Srila Prabhupada looked at him, raised his cane. He says, and then he took his cane and pointed it towards the Matajis, who were all doing obeisances, who'd all stayed back and done work, and you know, in this man's mind, we're all in Maya. He says, but the association of these ladies will take you back to Godhead. So with that, which will unravel many of the so-called women haters and haters of men dilemmas in ISKCON, that's Srila Prabhupada's authoritative version. By association of these, but not loosely, we should still be very, very, very careful. Prabhupada would not even be alone with his sister. It was heartbreaking. They were brought up together. So children who were brought up together, they might even be bathed together. And Prabhupada and both his sister, Pichima. Pichima was a woman, now wherever she is, but she's still in the same, fully, without a single drop of material conception. Pichima is the same as her brother. There's no material conception at all. They are totally pure in their hearts. And that Srila Prabhupada would not allow her to be in the room with him. He'd heartlessly drive her out, you know. We'd all be weeping, oh no, you know. Because she'd always want to be with her brother. She loved him so much, intensely. And then if the servants were there, he would be okay. But she'd want to talk to him. The servants leave. He says, now you must go. You cannot be alone with me. And she couldn't understand this, you know. Because her whole life she had been a brother, and all of a sudden he took sannyas and he was heartless with her. The same Srila Prabhupada, just to keep the balance. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you very much for letting me speak today. Hare Krishna. Thank you.